everyone. This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I have been having such a wonderful time lately. One book after another has come in that finally, because there was a period there where I was just getting really depressing books, and so I'm happy that I'm getting now books that not only thrill me and that touch my heart, just books that I enjoy so much. And one of these is a book that reminds me of my wonderful, wonderful years that I lived in England. And as all of my listeners know, I moved to England when I was 21 years old so I could live near where Jane Austen was born. So you can imagine when I got this book and I thought, well, my goodness, it is so wonderful. And it is a book about Charlotte Bronte. And I'm glad I wasn't over, you know, in those days, Charlotte Bronte wasn't the person that the author that I was obsessed with, because I would have landed up living up in Northern England. But I am so happy to welcome to the program today Sunday Taylor, because she knows all about Charlotte Bronte. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you fine. Oh, it's so good to have you on, because tomorrow is Jane Austen's birthday.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, and for me, as I mentioned at the beginning, I was obsessed with Jane Austen when I was a child, and I, at the age of, I think it was 8, I decided I was going to move to England and live where Jane Austen was born. And mm-hmm. I did. When I was 20, I saved my money. I worked all my childhood, saved my money. And when I was 21, I moved to England. And I bought a cottage, a 400-year-old cottage, not far from where Jane Austen was born. And so tomorrow is her birthday, December 16th, and she was born in 1775. So, of course, Charlotte Bronte and Jane Austen are sort of all mingled in people's minds together, because anyone who loves you know, British literature certainly reads both of them. And I think we have you can tell sometimes maybe people's personalities, which one they prefer the most. Which are they, Jane people or are they Charlotte people?
So true.
So tell us about this book that you wrote and about and how you became obsessed with Charlotte Bronte.
Sure. Oh, I would love to. First of all, thank you so much for having me on. What I wanted to do was write a book about a contemporary woman who would take a trip to a place I love, and I know you do too, to England, and this trip would change her life. It would be transformative. And I, at the time, was very interested in the idea of people first meeting online through blogs and websites and things like that, and communicating that way about shared passions and love of books, for example, and then meeting in real life. You know, what would happen? Would they become friends? And it happened to me a couple times with some lovely bloggers. We've stayed friends all this time because we discovered all of our, you know, things we had in common through on their websites or whatever, back and forth. And so she was going to be from LA, traveling to England to research a book on her favorite author, Charlotte Bronte. Charlotte Bronte is definitely one of my favorite authors. And I thought that there's so much material there to provide a backdrop to what happened in my character's actual life, that it would be just a treasure trove of information and interesting stories that I could weave throughout a contemporary tale, but with the background of the past. And I love Charlotte Bronte and I love Jane Austen. I mean, you know, those are the two, they're the goddesses for me of literature.
So tell us about the title.
Women writers.
Exactly. They are for us, really for so many people, and not just for women. Both of them have great supporters among men. Even Winston Churchill would love to read Jane Austen. They go beyond. I don't like them just to be considered women, authors for women, because Tolstoy is not an author just for men.
There's
so much richness. So tell us about the title. When you picked this title, why did you pick this title? What type of people did you want to attract?
Well, it's funny. The title came because my heroine, my protagonist, Claire Easton, she is an editor of a travel magazine, and she writes a column called The Anglophile's Notebook, which would appeal to people who are, who are interested in British literature. And so she, in her column, is going, Patsy, I'm going to get off my earpods.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting a big echo. I'm so sorry. Hang on one second.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that, because we want to hear about the details here of not just how you wrote the book, but also about Charlotte. I know this is, it's always, these things happen sometimes on live radio. You tell me when you're ready to start talking again, because for me, having lived in England and having traveled so much to this area, and I was very happy that I had the opportunity to actually drive through all of this countryside that Charlotte writes about. Are you there?
Here, I'm here, and I so apologize. Okay, I'm here, and tell me where we were.
Okay, well, we're talking about how you chose the title of the book.
Yes. So my author writes a monthly column called The Anglophile's Notebook, and where she explores British literature, both classic and contemporary. And so I thought that the book itself could be called The Anglophile's Notebook because she's an Anglophile. And, it's about her love of all the things that I love and I'm sure you love about England, which are woven throughout. So it was, I thought it was a good title because it's kind of a notebook of things that feed her and make her thrive and lead her eventually to a better life.
Now, we're talking about the character. So the main character, tell me about her.
Claire Easton is a magazine editor and writer living in Los Angeles. And she is married to a music producer, very successful guy named Ben Roden. And he is about to leave on a music tour of Australia for 3 months. So she figures this is the best time for her to go to England for a couple weeks to research her book and also meet a blogger who has written a book. Claire's going to interview her for her magazine. And so this two-week trip to England is perfect. She'll go up to Yorkshire, research the Brontes. But in the meantime, she finds out her husband has been unfaithful. They don't have children. And her mother has just passed away. Her only sibling has moved to New York. So there's really nothing for her to return to L.A. to. So she decides to stay indefinitely in England. And a lot of big things happen. She's at a crossroads. At that point in her life, she's 42 with unresolved issues about her marriage, her childlessness, her career, and her mother, who was a pretty inattentive, aloof kind of person. And all of these things are unbeknownst to Claire are going to play out on this trip. So it's a trip that's going to become a much longer trip than 2 weeks.
And there's this element of suspense of what her background is about her mother, and meanwhile it's all set in this wonderful world that for those of us who love Charlotte Bronte, and the entire story of the family, Set the background a little bit, because having, of course, traveled there. Now, you've traveled there many times. I travel many times. My husband and I, my husband would, we had a private plane, so we flew sometimes. We'd fly up north, and then we'd go to Sheffield, or we'd go somewhere, and then we'd rent a car. And so we'd drive through the countryside. So I had the opportunity to visit her home, drive all in all of the places that she wrote about. So tell us about what was that like for you, and how did you, the first time you went there, why, what drew you there?
Are you talking about to the parsonage?
Yes.
In Haworth? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I have started writing the book, and we do go to England every year, obviously, except for this year, and my husband and I wanted to see the parsonage. I wanted to see this place where three sisters had written books that have become some of the most beloved books in the English language. I wanted to see this unlikely place where they were able to create their masterpieces. And because I'd heard it was so remote and, you know, lonely and windswept kind of place. And they were, as young people, very isolated from the other people in the town. You know, they kind of held themselves apart. And so I was drawn to this. I was very much drawn to it. And you, if you love the Brontes and you have the opportunity to go, it's very worth it, because you, as you know, I guess you visited the parsonage, it sounds like.
Oh, yes.
You know, when you walk through that door and you see the dining room where they wrote, the girls, the sisters, would write their books at the dining room table and then would walk around the table each night talking to each other about what they'd all written, like a little writing group. And they would, you know, offer their comments on the sisters, whatever the sisters had written. And it was, it's pretty evocative place to think about that. So I was very drawn to it. I wanted to see the moors, which are very wild. And, you know, they don't look lush. They're kind of barren looking. I mean, in the summer, there's beautiful purple heather growing. But I wanted to see this wild, you know, place that
Heathcliff.
They have roamed every day.
You're looking for Heathcliff, and you're waiting for the wind to blow,
yes,
and that you'll hear Kathy.
That's right.
It's so thrilling. As you know, you've read the book many, probably you've read,
Wuthering
Heights many times, and of course, for me, it's strange. My favorite one is I Love the Professor, Charlotte's book.
Do you really? I need to reread it. It's been such a long time.
I love that book.
What is it that you like about that one?
Everything. I read Jane Austen over and over. I read, I read, of course, Jane Eyre, every once in a while. But, the professor, this is for me. This is, I know the, the background. Tell us a little bit why Charlotte was there in Belgium and what this story is about.
Well, she had gone to Brussels. You probably know a lot more about it than me, but I know the background. I just don't know that. I can't quite remember the book that well. She had gone to Brussels to study French and to become better in French, and because she was going to become a governess. And also, they were at one point going to open up a school of the sisters, which never really made it. But she fell in love with her master, her professor there, Professor Hager, and he paid her a lot of attention, and she thought he loved her too. He was married, of course, but she was very surprised when he and his wife were very standoffish at a certain point, because they picked up on Charlotte's love for him, and it was heartbreaking for her. It was a heartbreaking experience.
Now, your characters in your story, you have there a character. Was you have people who are deeply involved in the entire preserving Charlotte Bronte's yes. memory, the family, the entire family's memory, because it wasn't just Charlotte, but, you know, there still has to be some real work done on that father of hers, which he really irritates me. I think sometimes how these girls wrote these wonderful books, and all the time he was having supper alone, and he didn't want to sit right. with them. What was with this guy? You know, I like you crazy person. You had these people to talk to.
The Reverend Patrick yeah. Bronte. Yeah. Well, you know, their story is so interesting because there were, there were six of them, okay? So originally there were six children, the mother, the father, and they all moved to the parsonage. And the mother died early on, leaving the father with six children. And he was the, you know, he was the reverend at the church, which is right next door to the parsonage. And I think it was his sister or her sister came in, yeah. the aunt, to help raise them. And basically, they were preoccupied, exhausted, and left the kids to their own devices. And those children were basically on their own all the time. They didn't even play with other children in the town because there was a class distinction, so the classes didn't mix. And so they were just alone, but they had each other, and they were roaming the moors, and they were writing their little stories. But early on, the two eldest sisters, Elizabeth and Maria, well, they and Charlotte and I think Emily, too, were sent away to a school for the daughters of the clergy. And it was the model for Lowood in Jane Eyre, yeah. which was a terrible place with horrible sanitation, almost starvation-like diets. The children were fed, and the two, Maria and Elizabeth, got so ill, they died from the circumstances at the school, and go home, you know, and they die. And so it's a very sad life. I don't know that the Reverend Patrick Bronte was a perfect person, that's for sure, but I think he had a lot of tragedy.
Yeah, well,
and they all lived with
it. It's what I love about somebody writing a book like this, for people who aren't aware mm-hmm. of you know, who perhaps have, for me, I can't imagine anyone who hasn't read Charlotte Bronte, but, you know, like, isn't it?
Oh, there's a lot of people.
Yeah, but that's why.
That's
why I'm glad that you've written this book. I hope that it attracts people, because when they read this book, your book and your story is fascinating. You weave a very intriguing story here with fascinating characters, but you have this background, and I hope that it draws more people into reading. More of the Charlotte Bronte and Emily and Anne, and because these books are I think they are really so valuable, and you know, this program's for writers, and if I can't imagine a writer who has not read these books, because it really forms a basis of that you need. I think you feel stronger if you've read these books and you are now taking up writing. And, you know, so many people nowadays are starting to write during this pandemic-y time. And one of the things that every single of the great writers that I talk to, from, you know, Lee Child, everyone I talk to, the thing they say is you have to read well.
You have to read well. You have to have those beautiful sentences floating in your head. I mean, you have to be able to be inspired by beautiful writing. I think that's what makes so many of us want to write in the first place. But I agree with you, Patsy, about people should read one of the Bronte sisters, and my favorite, Charlotte. And I would say, you know, this time of the year, just, you know, pick up a copy of Jane Eyre, because it's so much fun to kind of lose yourself in this. It's like a big, sprawling Victorian novel. It's such a world that is built that we can just sink into, and you escape from everything else. And it's just such a gripping story. And I think I even wrote this in the Anglophile's Notebook, that it's really the most satisfying read. It's the ultimate love story and gothic thriller. I mean, it's a real page-turner. And there's so many memorable, dramatic scenes. It's no wonder there have been so many films made about Jane Eyre. just famous scenes you'll never forget. So, and I think it's extremely inspiring because it's so beautifully written and paced so well and with such interweaving of the interior life with the exterior life, what she's thinking.
And this is it's so beautiful when you think about it. You know, I get these people say, well, I need to get a new computer before I can start writing. I say, oh, please, don't tell me this kind of stuff. They're the Brontes. We're up in the middle of nowhere, really. I'm telling you, that area, people, is still desolate. It's still desolate.
And yes, and in 2016, it was the 200th anniversary of her birth. And then the following years were the 200th anniversary of all the other siblings' birth. So I went to the Morgan Library in New York, where they have the most incredible exhibition to celebrate this anniversary. And one of the items that they had borrowed from the British Library was the manuscript of Jane Eyre, handwritten. And you look at it's huge, too.
I know. I've seen it. I used to do
research. Have you seen it?
I used to do research. That's where I used to do research at the British
Library.
The library at the British Museum. That's where, and so
the British Library, exactly. Yeah. I meant to say British Library. Yes.
Yes. It's amazing.
No, it's
amazing.
So overwhelming she wrote it. And she wrote it when she started when she took her father to have cataract surgery in Manchester, and they had to be in a darkened room for weeks on end, and she started writing Jane Eyre. That's where she got the idea and began writing it. And to see all that handwriting,
and
beautiful, beautiful handwriting, which I think we're losing the art of. Absolutely.
Well, you know, I want to thank you so much because I think you've done a great job with this book. I think it's a fascinating book. The modern story, you know, it's a contemporary story, mm-hmm. but with all of these wonderful, wonderful elements to it that make it a really enriching story on top of it, you know, because we don't know exactly what's going to happen. We don't know, you know, there's this element of suspense, and we want to know, you know, what's going to happen to the characters. But mm-hmm. we have this wonderful and very rich background that you have put into the book, you know, that you have done a lot of research to, and I really appreciate a book like this.
Thank you so much. I think it was really fun when I came up with the idea of her meeting this new man who will be a new person in her life, the owner of the bookstore, John Spencer, who has a manuscript in his possession that uh-huh. may be an unpublished short story by a young Charlotte Bronte. And it all hinges on a letter from her brother, Branwell, saying this may be so, and the letter's gone missing.
That's why
and
it's so exciting. It's a suspense
yeah.
story. So,
that's
you know,
right.
Sunday Taylor, you have done a great job with this book. It's called, you know, when sometimes an author just comes along with the right idea at the right time, and I think that you've done just a terrific job. And I want to tell people, do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes. Okay. Yes, SundayTaylor.com.
SundayTaylor.com. And the name of the book is The Anglophile's Notebook. It's really great. It's a good read. You'll enjoy it, and you'll be inspired, I think, to read even more after this. So thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today, Sunday. You've made my Tuesday into an absolutely joyous day.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it so much.
Okay. Bye-bye, Ness.
Take care.
Bye. Okay, isn't that? Oh boy. Charlotte Bronte. Okay, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll go straight to the commercial break. When I come back, I have a few little messages, and then I have another fascinating book from the creator of Harriet the Spy. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And I just want to say that it was so much fun to talk to Sunday Taylor just a few minutes ago, and because she was obsessed with Charlotte Bronte. And because of that, and because of her love for Charlotte Bronte, she wrote a book called The Anglophile's Notebook. And this is what happens when you get obsessed with a character. Wow. You know, novelists have to come out with a character. They have to imagine the character. And they create the character. And it's a lot easier in many ways because you can just make it up. Lee Child, when he got fired from his job, and, you know, he was a very happy producer at Granada Television in Manchester. And, you know, one day he gets fired and he doesn't know what the heck he's going to do. And his wife gives him a year. She said, 1 year. And, you know, like, we have to pay bills. And so he had to sit down and come out with a character. Now, he did, and it turned out pretty good for him because he, of course, created Jack Reacher. And I was so happy he was on the program a few weeks ago, and we had his birthday interview to talk about the 25th Jack Reacher book. But it's always wonderful when you are a writer and you become obsessed with a character. And boy, oh boy, did my next guest get obsessed with a character. All right. Leslie Brody. Hi, Leslie.
Hello. How are you?
Okay. Well, you have a wonderful book, and it's called Sometimes You Have to Lie, The Life and Times of Louise Fitzhugh, Renegade, Author of Harriet the Spy. Wow, that's a mouthful, but
It is.
But it's a wonderful book, and I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, Leslie. I had sort of made a mess of the whole interview, the timing, but I'm glad we finally got you on because I know so many people, of course, were raised on Harriet the Spy, love Harriet the Spy books, but they know very little about Louise Fitzhugh. And you obviously at some point, I don't know if you became involved first with Harriet the Spy and then followed it up or what, because this is a fascinating book.
Thank you.
So tell us, how did you get...
I think I need that Toastmasters group that you were advertising just before me. Okay, so let me tell you how I came to find her. What about Harriet the Spy that is so extraordinary to so many people is her influence on them when they were children. I didn't have that opportunity. I am the exact same age as Harriet the Spy when she was published. Harriet was 11, I was 11. And at that time, I was already reading, you know, books for adults. I loved big books. I was reading, like, The Agony and the and I was reading science fiction, and I just had gone on beyond children's books. So it wasn't
when I was 11, I was doing Tolstoy and Dostoevsky.
Exactly. Yeah, I wasn't there yet. My family loves genre books, pulp books. So we had, you know, actually we had like these carousels from drugstores all over our house, all of these paperbacks with the covers torn off. And, you know, my father would get discounted, and they were all cowboy books and science fiction. I just lived in so many different worlds as a result. We were all big readers. But I didn't get into great books for, you know, another 5 years. I'm sure it was an influence of high school teacher. But anyway, so it wasn't for some time until I fell into the theater, and I was writing as a playwright, and I started doing a little bit of work as in children's theater, that I was asked to adapt the book, and had the opportunity to read Harry the Spy for the first time, and it was like, wow, we were meant for each other. And I felt just so fortunate that we found each other. I wrote the adaptation, which has now been seen in hundreds of there's been about 50 productions, but hundreds of children have enacted all these characters who they love. Meanwhile, I just went on with my life, and it seemed that I was really drawn to writing biographies. And, of course, Louise Fitzhugh was always a mystery because there was nothing known about her. And after a while, I couldn't shake her, let's say that. She was just inside my head. And I, 4 years ago, started working on this project. And
okay, we have a friend joining us.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was just trying to figure out how to mute my dog.
They don't have a mute button. They really don't.
I put on my earphones.
That's okay. That's okay.
I'm sorry, they're out of reach. Okay, all right. Yeah, I bet you don't do that, Toastmasters. Okay, sorry. Next question.
Okay, so you adapted, you did a play adapting Harry the Spy for the stage for children, and I'm sure it has been very well received because so many kids just love this book. As I am like you, I did not read them when I was young. I didn't. You know, I was way beyond that. I think when I was 4 years old. But it's funny that, you know, those kids who love it really love it, and nobody, of course, knew too much about Louise Fitzhugh for obvious. Well, now we know obvious reasons because they were written in the what years were they written, the books?
Well, Harry the Spy was written in 1963, published in 64. And then she had the follow-up, The Long Secret, came out the following year. And then she wrote Sport, which was also a follow-up, but that wasn't published during her lifetime.
Well, she had a rather amazing life. She came from Memphis. And, of course, from tell us about the family that she came from. And then what where did her world go? Where did she go from there?
Okay, so Louise was born a Southerner. She was born to a very wealthy family. Her father was a politician. Her mother was a dancer from across the tracks in Mississippi, based, you know, sort of from a very respectable family. They owned a logging company, but they lost that in the Depression. Her father's family were millionaires, and her mother was not accepted by her father's family. And the two of them, the two young people, divorced 1 year after Louise was born, in a very sensational divorce in which the father won custody and managed to defame the mother, and she lost absolute custody. And when Louise went to live with her father, he told her, Louise, that her mother was dead. And until Louise was about 5 years old, she grew up in, you know, great wealth, great affluence. But she thought her mom was dead until her mother showed up one day, and it was really a shocking, as you can imagine, event. She tried to come and see her daughter several times, but was turned away at the door by the staff who had been informed they had to do that if they wanted to keep their job.
Well, it sounds like a movie. I'm amazed no one's made a movie of it, because right there, I could start working on the screenplay with that story alone.
Yes. Well, you know, you would, and you have to add to that what was going on in the 1920s. This is at the end of the 20s, as we're going to the trial for divorce was ended in 1929, and then there's the Depression. And you're thinking, and this is an era of Jim Crow. And so, you know, there's just strict divisions and discrimination, persecution, misery for most of the population that's controlled by this sort of small white, elite. And Louise grew up, her best friends were the staff. She didn't really have a great relationship with any adult. And she came through that in some way. She at least trusted the staff to some greater extent. She didn't trust her family just because they'd lied to her. She grew up always sort of wanting to protect the more vulnerable. She in many ways connected the fate of the misunderstood artist with children who were badly misunderstood and innocent, weak, vulnerable. She made that her life path.
So when eventually she lands up in New York City, how did she come to write Harriet the Spy? What was the background for that, when she decided to write a children's book?
So Louise always thought that she was a painter first. Her art was visual. In her imagination, that was what mattered most. But she always also wanted to be a poet. She loved writing. She had a difficult time because her father was so controlling. He was also an intellectual, and for him, on one hand, women were not going to be successful in professions. That was not their role in life. He saw them as helpers, as supporters, as the other half of the society duo. And as far as writers, if any writer wanted to write, they might as well just throw their hands up if they weren't Tolstoy or Dostoevsky. He had very high standards. And that got inside her head, and she just couldn't wait to get out of Memphis. So I'll just say that quickly. She abhorred Jim Crow. She just was disgusted by the white supremacist milieu. She always said, bury me north of the Mason-Dixon line. And she got out as quickly as she could. She went to Bard College to study poetry and painting. And after some time in New York City, in Greenwich Village, as a painter, she started to get some gallery shows. And we're talking about one gallery show that was unique. It was a one-person show. She hoped that it would put her over the top and give her that attention that artists look for, that someone will know who they are and her paintings will start to become somehow valuable or, just seen. Let me say that. She really wanted her materials to be seen. So she had this one gallery show. It was a success in that she sold some paintings, but the gallery owners ripped her off. They hadn't told her all the fees that they would take. They didn't explain how expensive it was to put on the show. And at the end, she didn't make any money, and she felt like art itself had betrayed her, the whole art establishment. And she said, okay, I'm going to take a break from that, and I'm going to write a kid's book. Now, I think I managed to forget to tell you about Suzuki Bean. But this is the second book she'd written.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, okay. Go on.
Okay, so this is Suzuki Bean. Louise had illustrated, so she didn't actually write it. The writer was Sandra Scopatone, who was incredibly helpful to me as I was writing this book. And it, without Sandra, I never would have been able to get the interviews and all the information that I did get. She was so generous. And she's a great writer. She and Louise wrote Suzuki Bean, which is the book about a baby beatnik that they brought out in 1960. And it was in response to the Eloise in the Plaza book. So Suzuki Bean is a beatnik baby who lives on the Lower East Side. She lives in Houston. My New York knowledge is a little bit limited. Where is that? Is Houston Street on the Lower East Side? You can tell me.
In Greenwich Village?
Yeah, in Greenwich Village. So that book did really well. So after Louise's failure, what she felt was her failure at the as a gallery producer, I mean as a gallery show, she went on to think about writing a children's book again. And this book, she just sketched out. She had like 9 or 10 pages of it, and she was giggling all the way through it as she was writing. And she wrote to her good friend Jim Merrill, I'm writing a book about a nasty little girl who keeps a journal on all her friends. And that was the beginning of it.
Wow. And and after that, it did take off. And you know, of course, as I said, so many young people, you know, read this. Now, my boys never read it, they never did it, and I didn't have any girls, so I actually didn't read it until I was really quite old before I read the Harriet the Spy books. But it's fascinating, the character that she developed, and I love the whole thing of. You know, snooping on people and writing it down, and I think that's a perfect thing for a writer.
Yeah, a lot of people, people read it for a lot of different reasons, but in some ways, her influence is on writers because it's about ways of seeing. So it's about keeping notes and understanding what you're seeing by remembering those notes and rereading them, and the kind of knowledge and enlightenment comes with looking at things really closely.
Well, you know, of course, I see that you've done a great deal of research. You mentioned some of the people who have helped you in this research, because for a character like this, she has a sort of a big footprint. Tell us a little bit, how did you gather all of this research together?
Okay, so I did about 60 interviews, and I was really fortunate in two ways. I worked with a researcher who is a wonderful researcher. Her name is Regina White, and she helped for about 2.5 years. We just research deeply. So Regina would come up with, she's a literary detective, really, and she'd come up with the names and addresses, and she'd find lots of articles. Well, I was doing the same thing, but Regina would be working at her computer, and she'd get me the data, and I'd go out and make the interviews, I'd make the contact, I'd write these up. So we were kind of a double team in the beginning before I started writing the book. And so this was a way that we kind of were able to dig into Louise's life. And then as a result, I found some of her friends that she'd known. They all had fantastic stories to tell of her life and times. And she was part of a network of extraordinary artists, really a social circle of high-flying, mostly queer career women who in their youth had crashed through ceilings in literary and artistic professions. They were editors at glossy magazines and books, copy editors, photographers, illustrators, theatrical producers. I'd say, and their mutual friend, I'm going to just give you this quote because I love it, the playwright and author Jane Wagner characterized them as successful, creative, pleasure-loving, ambitious, knowledgeable lesbians. And I was able to meet several of these women, and I came away thinking that every one of them deserves a biography.
Well, you certainly have done the work for this biography because it's so complete. I was really impressed with the work that you've done. The book is called Sometimes You Have to Lie, The Life and Times of Louise Fitzhugh, Renegade Author of Harriet the Spy. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. Leslie Brody, do you have a website that you want people to go to, or do they have the book is available wherever books are sold? As I said, this is a wonderful, it's great when you find a character that grabs you, a real life character, of somebody that you can sort of do this kind of work with. It's better than creating one on your own, I think. Sometimes it gets so exciting because you have all this rich material, and you've done a wonderful job with this book.
Thank you so much. I do have a website. It's LeslieBrodyAuthor.com, and I'd be happy to hear from people. Thank you so much for your kind words. It's really been a great ride so far. I'm so happy people are rediscovering Louise.
Yes, I think you've done a great job, and you're going to, I think, help a lot of authors. This is an example. I'll tell everyone that the work that Leslie has done in this book is an example to all of you who are writing biographies, and you want to understand the process and how you take your research and then write an intriguing story, because it's very, very well written.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, it's been great talking to you. It's been a joy. Thank you so much, Leslie Brody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Okay. Wow. Well, for those of you who love Harriet the Spy, that's, you know, as I said, I didn't grow up with Harriet the Spy, but there are many of you who did, and it would be wonderful if you get this book and read it. And certainly, Jerome Preisler was on the other week, and we were talking about how he became obsessed with a historical character. And this can happen to you, and it's so exciting when that happens to you. So you never know what you'll come up with. Someday you might just read about a character that's interesting, and then it opens up. Look, she interviewed 60 people. Do you realize how just that alone enriched her life? She was doing something, and she saved all of this stuff, all of this research that she's discovered for history. So she'll go down in history, and that can happen to you too. Just find a character that you like and start researching, and you never know where it will lead you. But also, you know, there's always cozy mysteries to go to if you're not ready to do a lot of deep research. Although I will tell you that one of the authors whose works I love so much, Carol J. Perry, believe me, she does her research when she writes her books for the Witch City Mysteries. They are always beautifully written and beautifully researched. And Carol knows a lot about antiques, and because she wrote for years for antique magazines. And so she has all this. This is what I'm telling everybody. do a lot of different things. Try a lot of different things. Carol was writing for an antique magazine. I bet she never at that time thought, one day I'm going to be a really big Kensington author. She is so fantastic. And her last book, Murder Take Two, a humorous and cozy magical mystery, is, I think, the 10th in the Witch City Mystery Series. This can happen to you. It's just find that joy of writing. You know, you've done so many things. It looked like Lee Child. I'm sort of obsessed with Lee Child because I was so happy that he gave me an entire hour to talk to him. And we talked not about just his Jack Reacher. Everybody talks about Jack Reacher, but he's so fascinating on so many levels. He was a producer at Granada Television when I was in England. And I actually was working in Manchester at the same time that he was there. And so it's so wonderful when I look back on it, and I know that he had this fascinating career in television. He did some of the greatest television work in England. But then he gets fired. He gets fired one day. And what does he do? He has to sit down and start writing. And he wrote it by hand, by the way. The first book, The Killing Floor, was written by hand. And he just sat down and he came out with a character. And just like Carol J. Perry came out with a wonderful cozy mystery series and the Witch City Mysteries, she has wonderful characters in there. And this is part of the fun. The characters become part of you. They become part of your life. You're thinking about them all the time. They become friends. And this is why I'm telling all of you, you know, we're still in this pandemic-y thing. People still aren't going anywhere. People can't travel like they used to. A lot of people are going to be having a long, long holiday over Christmas and New Year's. Start reading. Why not binge on Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries? That'll put you in a good mood, I'll tell you that. And because remember what I always say to everyone, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video like Lee Child and Andrew Child's Jack Reacher, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel like I hope for Carol J. Perry. You never know, and you won't know unless you start. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. Okay, we got all the calls done today, even with a dog barking and people not with their iPad-y things in their ears and whatever. Thank you, Ed. You put up with a lot. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Bye-bye now.